Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hoop We Can Believe In. We're Tali
and Rachie,
twins and lifelong sports fans here to bring you into our growing love for women's basketball and make the case for why this is the sport we should all be watching. Today, we're going to be talking about coverage of the WNBA and how that's shifted over time and brought us to where we are today. So, Rach, why don't you start us off with giving us some background about what coverage has looked like in the past for the WNBA?
Yeah, so I have done a bit of research about this, and it's really interesting to sort of see, A, who are the networks who have been carrying, what are the different kinds of media that we've been able to watch WNBA games over time, and also, like, how has money played into that? Like, who's making money, how much, how does that compare? And so from the bit of research which I've done, which there's probably more I could do, but here's what I've got for now. When the WNBA started 25 years ago, there was a deal that the WNBA through the NBA, because they've been owned by the NBA the whole time, made with NBC to televise one game a week. And I remember actually, like, the NBA on NBC Music and watching WNBA games, like, in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what that was. It was, like, every so often there would be one game. The ratings were actually much bigger at the beginning of the WNBA's life than people expected. And actually, over time, though, they kind of started to go down. And part of this seems to have had something to do with the fact that it just wasn't regularly on. It happened here every so often. It happened on ESPN every so often. Several years into the WNBA being a thing, the draft started to be televised. But there wasn't really a full-on investment in televising the WNBA for a really long time. And so there are these real ebbs and flows. I remember reading a stat that in 1998, which was 2 years into the WNBA's life, single games had higher ratings than NHL games did. And so it's really interesting to sort of see these glimpses of success and of popularity, but then not have the opportunity for those to really build on themselves because it wasn't a consistent presence, like, in our, you know, on our TVs in the same way that the NBA was, and that other kinds of sports were. In 2002, another thing that happened was that ESPN started getting into televising more games, but there were no rights fees that they paid to the WNBA. Now, keep in mind that, like, at this time, the ESPN and other networks were paying, like, billions of dollars to televise over the course of several years NBA games, but there was really so little money that was being pumped into the WNBA, which really, like, affects, you know, endorsements. It affects what the team's capacity is to, like, care for their players and pay their players. And it's just really interesting to sort of see this league survive all these years later with really limited investment. And one of the big deals that happened was that in 2013, finally, there was a big TV deal. ESPN invested in the WNBA with rights fees to the WNBA for about $12 million a year. And then last year, that also steadily changed. And a big part of the story of that has to do with the fact that in the bubble season, when COVID hit and the WNBA was happening in a bubble in Bradenton, Florida, there was such a decrease in live sports. And so there had been this move made to televise all of these WNBA games that wouldn't have otherwise been televised if they were on a normal schedule. And because the season was really condensed, there were just a lot of games on at one time, and the viewership just, like, skyrocketed. And so the WNBA in this moment that we've been talking about on this podcast of real growth is continuing to build off of last season. And one thing that is happening this season, which is so cool, is that we are starting to see games not just on, you know, our networks, many of which are cable networks, but also on social media as a way to really like acknowledge that there are other generations, younger generations who might really want to access these games and be fans, but otherwise might not have a TV. I don't have a TV. And so we've actually been able to watch some games on Twitter, on Facebook. There are some games on Amazon Prime. And so if you actually look around, the rates of televising and of just making these games publicly accessible in all kinds of ways is really on the rise. And it's allowing the WNBA to like break into totally new demographics, which is like a really, really exciting thing. And it also shows how much creative leadership there is right now to really try to utilize this moment to build the league, to build the brand, and to get a broader fan base.
That's really hopeful. And I feel grateful that clearly it's part of why we've come to be fans of the WNBA now and have accessibility to watching their games. Do you have a sense of if where we are now is going to shift and if there's hopefully going to be even more coverage in the future, or if where we are now is sort of where we're going to be?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, the hope is that having more games televised, expanding the ways in which people can watch games just continues to build the fan base. And I think a big part of the conversation in the WNBA around like expanding access actually has a lot to do with like, could there be more teams? And so, you know, it's really different when you have all of these games being televised between a league of 32 teams like exists in the WNBA, in the NBA, in the as we call it, the MNBA, the Men's National Basketball Association. But for women, when you only have 12 teams, they're just going to be fewer games. Mm-hmm. I actually think it's allowed us to really like wrap our arms around the whole league in some way and really like understand what's happening, but totally also get that like more teams is good for, you know, building fan bases in other cities. And so I think as more people watch, one of the ways that, that there will be more games is if there are more teams. Yeah. And so we're really watching to see like where might those teams be? Where might this expansion actually take place in a way that just continues to really spread the good news of the WNBA?
The good news of the WNBA. It's so good. Richie and I have this dream of when going into bars more regularly is a thing that we continue to do. Hopefully that'll happen, but hard to say right now with everything that's going on with COVID. But we're excited to find our bars in the Boston area that will play WNBA games and that we can bring groups to. And we're excited to see those groups be popping up all over the place in bars across America. So that's something to look forward to in the future. I'm curious, as we're talking about coverage, if there are games that stand out to you, either in the past or from this season, that have just been like really excellent games that because of limited coverage, our listeners may not have seen, and so you want to point them toward.
Yeah, so one thing that's also great about the age we are living in terms of like what games are available is that you can watch like the highlight reels of every game on mm-hmm. YouTube. And so mm-hmm. Tali and I, when we miss games, tend to watch like the 10-minute reviews the next day. And it's a really great way to like stay up to date and really feel like you're in all of these games. But this also is true for some of the historically amazing games. And two that I really, really want to put on people's radar screens, and I think this might not be the highlight reels, but more so the whole game. But if you at least go towards like the fourth quarter, just like some really, really amazing playoff games in WNBA history. One is the 2016 Game 5 of the playoff finals between the Los Angeles Sparks and the Minnesota Lynx. Mm. So good. So, so good. I really highly recommend finding that one on YouTube. And a second one is the 2018 semifinals in the playoffs, Game 5 between the Phoenix Mercury and the the Seattle Storm, which was really just a phenomenal, phenomenal game where some of the greats, Super, Diana Taurasi, some others, like really just went back and forth that whole fourth quarter, knocking down shot after shot. And there are fans in the stands, which is something that we haven't really experienced in the same way as we've started to get into games during COVID. So there are just some really amazing games that can like help really build a sense of like the history, who were the stars at different times, and like what is the WNBA at its fullest energy really look like. Tal, what about the question of games from this season that you would recommend people watch?
Well, I've referenced this before, but there have been so many buzzer beaters and games that have really come down to the last minute or last shot this season. And I think one maybe unassuming game I'd like to point out, just because it like really started off this season, was the home opener for the New York Liberty against the Indiana Fever, two teams that we don't talk very much about. But that game came down to a final shot, Sabrina Ionescu making an amazing three-pointer to break an 87-87 tie in the final seconds. It was a really incredible game, and I think it was between two teams that, you know, have struggled at different points in the season or for much of the season, but on opening night to really open the season up in that way, I think was a really incredible opening to a season that we've seen so many other similar games end in that way. So I really love that and would point that to you. And I think we're going to try to figure out how to post links to these games, the 10-minute highlight reels, so that you guys can see them too and have them be easy to find. Oh,
what's that I hear?
And that's the buzzer. That's time for today. Thank you to our listeners again for joining us. Thank you to Liz Ashleman, our executive producer, to Rachel Fixenbaum for the name Hoop We Can Believe In. And again, this is the second time we've been able to publicize this, but we now have an email address, hoopwecanbelievein@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, your questions, thoughts, musings, memes, anything you want to share with us. This has been Hoop We Can Believe In. I'm Tali.
And I'm Rachie.
Signing off.